Hello, I'm Alex Shabbat. This is number 0243, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0243. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet puppeteer Jesse Tom, who talks about his new children's musical picture book, Some Bunny Loves You.
It started with the song. The song was the seed, and that evolved into a single illustration, which then it was like, let's do all of these bunnies. They're so awesome. And then it became a whole book. And then we're like, we got to put a CD in there. And then one song's not good enough for a CD. We got to fill it all out. So now there's tracks for every single bunny. Then we added finger puppets. It's just kind of blown up.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit is back to talk about relationship ultimatums.
Ultimatums, generally speaking, are not always welcomed, but are sometimes necessary. It always depends on the context. If someone is issuing an ultimatum, usually means that they're at a crossroads. Either something has to change or they're going to reevaluate whether or not they're going to continue this relationship.
Consultant Erica Spiegelman talks about addiction recovery.
I think that with social media and everything, you know, access that kids have to Twitter and Pinterest and Instagram, and, you know, I think that there's a lot of ways that people tune out, and I think that one of those ways now is social media. They distract from their everyday problems, or they procrastinate on things that they need to do, and I think that leads to feeling like their lives are out of control, which then could possibly lead to an addiction eventually.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0243 was Alex Shabbat, who is a freelance cameraman at Global Montreal, the other place that I work. Thank you very much, Alex, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Pinal County, Arizona sheriff's deputy pulled over a car after seeing the driver commit several traffic violations. The deputy took particular notice of the passenger, who allegedly was covered with marijuana flakes. The deputy, who happened to be a canine officer, had his dog help him search the car and found more marijuana under the passenger seat, along with drug paraphernalia and a cardboard box with a loaded handgun, extra ammo, and paperwork relating to the prison release of Daniel Clegg, age 34. Clegg, the marijuana-covered passenger, had been released from prison just an hour before. He was arrested on drug and weapons charges. Boy. The revolving door of prison is spinning faster and faster these days. And by the way, that was a land speed record of scoring drugs upon release, I think. Anyway, while on that topic of revolving doors, when Christopher M. Miller, age 40, was released from the Southwoods State Prison in Bridgeton, New Jersey, after a 15-year stint for robbery, it took him overnight to travel the 82 miles to the Stride Right shoe store in Toms River. Not apparently to get something more comfortable than his prison-issue shoes, but allegedly to rob the place, the exact same store he robbed that resulted in his prison sentence. He tapped the register for $389 and fled, but was quickly apprehended by an officer who tracked him down with a police dog. Those dogs are doing well these days, apparently. The money and the clerk's cell phone were recovered, and Miller was booked into jail on a $100,000 bond. The most surprising part after 15 years is that store is still there, but hey, you have to give points to this guy for customer loyalty. And gee, do you think he spent the last 15 years in jail wondering what mistakes he made in the initial robbery? All that time thinking about a do-over just to get it wrong again. No mulligans here. If at first you don't succeed, talk to your parole officer about a new life plan. And still with revolving doors, I have another one. Sean M. Chavies, age 40, was allegedly on his way to do a drug deal in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, when he ran out of gas. "They're selling like hotcakes, yo," Sean had told the buyer. "If you want some, you better hurry up." When Sean didn't arrive for the deal, the buyer called him. "Hold on, I'll be there," he replied, explaining he found two men to push him to a filling station. The buyer, an undercover cop, arrested Sean there. Why was he in such a hurry to unload the drugs? Well, he was due in court to be sentenced after being convicted in an earlier drug case. They just don't learn, do they? Yeah. Moving right along, 55-year-old Braden Robinson lost his lawsuit, but he didn't let one court's decision settle the matter, police say. The man he sued said Robinson had accused his family of torturing and killing one of Robinson's relatives, a part owner supposedly in the Barks Root Beer Company. Robinson was thrown out of court for causing disturbances, police say, and Robinson's case was thrown out for lack of evidence. With that, the Orleans Parish, Louisiana judge ordered Robinson to pay the defendant $100,000. As the defendant was crossing the street near the courthouse, he was hit by a truck. Twice. Police say Robinson was the driver, and he's been jailed on an attempted murder charge, in addition to charges from a SWAT standoff, police say, that he got into later in the day. You know, I understand that there is a pretty complete appeal system in the American judicial system, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't involve using a truck. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Rod Somerville, age 54, was working in his yard in Queensland, Australia, when an eastern brown snake bit him on the finger. His son was sleeping on the couch, but Somerville didn't want to wake him and make him panic. "If you panic, it makes it worse," he said. Instead, he killed a snake with a shovel, called an ambulance, went to the fridge, grabbed a beer, and sat down and waited. "I said to myself, if I'm going to die, I'm going to have a beer. So I got a Goldie out of the fridge and drank that. Because, you know, eastern browns are the second most venomous snake in the world." Okay. He has spent 4 days in intensive care and remains hospitalized with kidney damage, but is still very much alive. You know, that beer company should hire him as their next commercial spokesperson. Yeah. And by the way, I don't know whether the kidney damage is a result of the bite or the beer. No information on that. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Just in time for Easter, puppet author Child St. Thomas has teamed up with musicians to release the new musical picture book, Some Bunny Loves You. And before we talk to the man behind the picture book, let's hear a little bit of Some Bunny Loves You.
Down in a place called Carpenter Glen, there is an odd little bunny den. The bunny rabbits there are kind and true, and they have a secret to share with you. They told me some bunny loves you. Some bunny loves you. Some bunny loves you. Down at Carpenter Glen. It might be Chester with the pink mustache, or Jean with the jelly beans on her eyelashes. It might be Gerald on his flying toast, or Gilfred Mackenzie that loves you the most. But some bunny loves you. 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 Down at Carpenter Glen.
That's just a snippet of Some Bunny Loves You. On the line with us now from Vancouver is the man behind Child St. Thomas, and that would be Jesse Tom. He joins us via Skype-to-Skype communications. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having
us. We heard a little us. I hear you saying that. Do puppet masters always refer to speak in the plural, or the royal we?
It's the royal we. I like to use that phrase, yeah, and it's usually the two of us.
So. Okay. Now tell me, you put this together with musicians, local musicians out in Vancouver, which is where you are. How did this project come to be?
It started with the song. The song was The Seed, which you just heard a little snippet of, and that evolved into a single illustration, which then it was like, let's do all of these bunnies. They're so awesome. And then it became a whole book. And then we're like, we got to put a CD in there. And then one song's not good enough for a CD. We got to fill it all out. So now there's tracks for every single bunny. And then we added finger puppets. It's just kind of blown up.
Now you say there are tracks for every single bunny. How many bunnies are there?
There is 8 mentioned in the book. They're all, they have a very, very, there's a variety of quirks. So each bunny has its own unique idiosyncrasy. And so, for example, Chester with the pink mustache, he's got his own accordion track because he's kind of got an Eastern European sort of look to him. So that's one example. They all have their own instrument. There's accordion, there's piano, there's banjo, there's all kinds of stuff.
I mentioned the various musicians. How collaborative is this process in putting this together?
It was really important to me that everybody had some creative input. So I basically gave the musicians free rein. In fact, one fellow who recorded the saxophone for Margaret, who pours saxophone tea, he was just, I was like, where am I going to find a sax player? About 5 seconds after I said that, I hear a saxophone coming from, I was walking around downtown Victoria. He was a busker on the street. I just went up to him. I said, introduced myself, told him about the project, said, can you jam in the key of C for like a minute and a half? He did it, and it worked out so perfectly. So it was really, really spontaneous the way it all happened, and I basically just let every musician in on what the project was about and just let them go.
Now, this picture book, Some Bunny Loves You, is not your first picture book, right?
Technically not. It's the first one that we've released. We were with a publisher in Vancouver for a while, and they went under, so those books never saw the light of day. They will eventually. We're going to put them out on our own label, but this is the first officially released book, but there's a lot more to come, yeah.
And who are you looking, I mean, obviously it's a children's book. Who are you looking at as far as the age group for this book?
Some Bunny Loves You. I intended it for about age 3 to age 8, and I think there's a sweet spot there. But to be honest, I've had just about every adult who's ordered it has also gotten a copy for themselves or for their grandma or for... It seems to be ringing true for people that like a certain type of children's literature, like Lemony Snicket or Edward Gorey or Shel Silverstein. It kind of crosses the boundary a little bit. So yeah, my intention was about 3 to 8, and we've had a response from more than that. So.
And why do you think, because you say you had that sweet spot of the age group that you wanted to do this for, why do you think it has resonated so much with adults?
Well, I guess partly the goofiness. I think the song itself, like, I don't really ever set out to write children's music, to be honest. It's just sort of this inner child in me likes this goofy style, and... But the music itself isn't sort of this, I mean, this is my opinion, but other people have echoed this. It's not really the usual corny or cheesy, I guess you'd say, like cartoony kind of music for kids. It's got this emotional quality, especially near the end of the song. It kind of drifts into these other chords. And so I like to have that. I like to have that element it's like brings the heart on board. It's a little deeper, and I think that's what adults resonate with. They sense that something's going on other than an adult trying to write something that they think kids will like. This is something that's coming from my genuine delight, and I think that's what resonates.
Now, this is radio, so unfortunately we don't get to see Child St. Thomas, but first of all, the idea, people can go to your website, which is puppetauthor.com. I've got to mention that right off the bat. But Child is spelled C-H-Y-L-D. Why is that?
You know, Peter, I've asked him that so many times. He insists on this. He's very old school. And he's a contemporary of a lot of old English folks. And that's sort of the original way the word child was spelled. And he just won't let it go. I told him, you know, in Canada, it's not, people don't recognize that word. He thought all the better, because then he's got this unique name. So he's got a bit of an ego around it, unfortunately, but he's such a sweet guy that I just let him run with it. And it's a Child, C-H-Y-L-D, and that's what he goes by.
I've always wanted to ask a puppeteer this particular question, and that is the fact that you do indeed work with puppets. How much of your alter ego is really you?
That's an interesting question. How much of the puppet's personality is me?
And more importantly, how much of it is you, the part of you that you don't normally show or tell people about?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question, Peter. The way that a character developed was through my clown training. And in clown training, you basically isolate different components of your personality and amplify them to the extreme degree. It's all a part of me. And on the other hand, when you do that, I think you're working at the edge zone of your persona where it kind of bleeds into the mysterious whole. Speaking a little mystically here, I know, but just kind of opens up the creative space, the imaginative mind, and a lot of things can come through there that seem like they're kind of about you, but they're kind of coming from someplace else. And that's where it really gets interesting, because a lot of times I'm performing with Child as a puppet, and the things that he says are something I would never know myself to think or know myself to come up with. So it really opens up this unique space, which is what I love so much about puppetry.
Has Child or any other puppet you worked with gotten Jesse in trouble?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could tell you a story, a quick one, just about doing a kids show up in Pemberton, and I had a puppet on the looping pedal, which, for those who don't know, is just a floor pedal that you press the button. It captures what's going into the microphone and loops it again and again and again. And this is at a kids show, so kids audience, parents expecting something sweet and nice. And the puppet looped his voice into the microphone. It started to go round and round through the speakers. And the next thing out of his mouth was, whose sexy voice is that? And I mean, maybe not totally out there, but it's the word sexy is not really something you want to use a lot on stage when you're performing for kids. So I've blushed, actually. It's a really strange moment. I mean, my puppets just said something that came from my mouth and from somewhere in me, I suppose. But there you go. So, it's puppets would get me in trouble all the time. I mean, especially when I pull one out in front of my girlfriend and she really just wants to talk to me.
And that's, of course, that's therapy for another day.
Yeah, totally.
But right now, just very quickly, people can check out the website, puppetauthor.com. How can people get their hands on Somebody Loves You?
So the landing page on that website will present you with a link. You can just click that. It'll take you right to the Etsy page. The Etsy store is Tomfoolery Creations, THOM, tomfoolerycreations.etsy.com, and the book's available there. But the quick way, just puppetauthor.com, and the page you're greeted with has a link right on it.
Thank you very much, Jesse, for taking the time to talk with us, and say hello to a child for me.
Yeah, I will. Thanks so much, Peter. That was fun.
Puppeteer Jesse Tom. You can go to my website at thestuffall.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0243, and you'll find links to Jesse's site, plus a link to Amazon.com, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're experiencing the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about relationship ultimatums and also addiction recovery. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day, but right now, lots more Stuff File news here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Ed Joseph bought a PS3 online, but the gaming console never turned up. He paid by bank transfer and couldn't get his money back. He complained to Gumtree, that's the British classified ad site, where he found the machine, but Gumtree said the bank transfer broke its rules. He complained to police, but they said he had little chance of catching the fraudster. Joseph had the offender's mobile number and unlimited texting plan and an iPhone that lets him copy long documents into the texting screen and send them all at once. And he did so as bombardments of short messages, 1,143 of them in the case of sending just Hamlet. He began working on sending the entire works of Shakespeare, some time to maximize disruption. The fraudster sent him abusive messages and then tried to call him, but to no avail. "I'm going to keep doing it," said Joseph. "If nothing else, I'm sharing a little bit of culture with someone who probably doesn't have much experience with it." Yes, well, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against the sea of troubles. Well played, Mr. Joseph. Well played. Meanwhile, the annual Zompocalypse, otherwise known as Zombie Festival and Preparedness Expo, won't be coming back to Tacoma, Washington. The first 2 years were so successful, the organizers wanted to hold a third in the Tacoma Dome, the covered city-owned arena used for concerts and other events, which holds up to 30,000 people. But Dome management laid down the law. No Nerf guns or other toy or replica firearms, no knives, and no cleavage. No cleavage? If that's a rule, we sure didn't see anyone enforcing it at the Miley Cyrus concert in February, the local newspaper notes. Anyway, we treat everyone equally, insists Dome director Kim Bedier, dead or alive. The zero-tolerance toy gun rule seems to be the main sticking point here, though. That and the scheduling conflicts, what with the upcoming gun show scheduled for the Dome. Yeah, no irony there, huh? And sure enough, the organizers promised there will be no toy guns at that show, too. I suppose the zombies could hold a protest march if they really want to do something about this and are upset. I'm guessing that would be a very slow-moving protest march, though. Yeah. Anyway, moving right along, Paul James, age 35, of Runcorn, Cheshire, England, took a quick trip to the resort town of Blackpool, where he rented a couple of mobility scooters worth up to $2,000. He decided to steal them and started loading them into a van in front of the local police station. Officers noticed James's odd behavior, as well as the lettering "Blackpool Wheelchair Hire" on the sides, and nicked the thief. Lawyer Daniel Harmon explained his client's crime to the court this way: "He was out to make a quick buck, to put it bluntly." Yes. Unluckily for him, it allows the cops to make a quick caller. And we have one more item to get to before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. I have heard of a Big Mac attack, but what happened at a St. Petersburg, Florida McDonald's recently is just simply ridiculous. Closed-circuit television caught the entire ordeal of a woman naked but for a pair of thong panties and flip-flops. And by the way, if there are any Australians listening to this story, I've just confused them because thong and flip-flops are the same thing there. Anyway, this woman entered the McDonald's and began screaming and trashing the place, pushing equipment off the counter and eventually walking behind the counter. Employees didn't raise a finger to stop her, as you can hear them making a running commentary as they were watching the action from the safety of the manager's office. At one point, she sticks her mouth under the soft-serve ice cream dispenser to take advantage of a free snack. When that doesn't work quite as well as she hoped, she simply grabs a cone and makes herself an ice cream, leaning casually against the machine for a moment while she enjoys it. After that, she walks out of camera view, and we can only guess what kind of mayhem she caused in the food prep area. Now, while she almost certainly ended up in police custody, she can at least claim her 15 minutes of internet fame. Police say the rampage started because an employee turned down the woman's offer for oral sex. The woman, who was later identified as 41-year-old Sandra Suarez, a mother of two, told a local television station that she had a bipolar episode and couldn't remember what had happened. And doctors say she was not intoxicated at the time of the incident. And by the way, the employees who aired the video have all been fired. The store manager says they uploaded the video without his permission and violated his values. Well, I guess someone there doesn't deserve a break today. Would you like fries with that? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Relationship coach Frank Kermit is a best-selling author, educator, and a relationship columnist. He's also a certified hypnotherapist. And Frank joins us on the line once again via Skype to Skype Communications to talk about ultimatums. Hi, Frank.
How you doing, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. So when it comes to ultimatums, I'm assuming this is never a good thing.
Well, here's the thing. Ultimatums, generally speaking, are not always welcomed, but are sometimes necessary. It always depends on the context. If someone is issuing an ultimatum, it usually means that they're at a crossroads. Either something has to change, or they're going to reevaluate whether or not they're going to continue this relationship. And sometimes it's really necessary because it might be the only way to really make your partner understand that you are very serious. Unfortunately, not everybody uses ultimatums in the right way. Some people just get so angry that they say things in a moment of anger and they issue an ultimatum they don't really mean. And that's dangerous.
Well, when somebody does that, when they do something that they don't mean, I guess it all depends on how long you've been in this relationship and how well you know the other person. Because it's like I would assume the boy that cried wolf. If you're someone who continually pulls the ultimatum card but doesn't necessarily follow through or want to follow through, doesn't it lessen the power of the ultimatum?
That's exactly right. If you are the type of person that issues an ultimatum but doesn't follow through on it when you don't get the answer you were looking for, that means that sometime in the future, when you are actually serious, when you are there saying, look, this has got to change or I'm leaving, your partner will simply not take you seriously. And the next thing you know, you're ending the relationship. Your partner doesn't understand why.
Okay, so you say there are times when it's a good thing to level an ultimatum. I guess the reality of when you're willing to do it, you also have to be willing to follow through with it, correct?
That's exactly right. And the only ultimatums that I would recommend any clients to actually issue are those ultimatums that are based on your absolute boundaries. If you're issuing an ultimatum on an absolute boundary where you would actually follow through and end the relationship, that may be the only time where I will say, yep, you may have to issue an ultimatum.
As someone who sees clients, as someone who is a relationship coach, what are situations where you see the ultimatum card played where it really shouldn't be? And I'm not talking about, you know, people not willing to follow through, but ultimatum scenarios.
Okay, ultimatum scenarios. I've seen ultimatum scenarios where someone says, cut contact with your exes or I'm not sticking around. And that may or may not be realistic. For example, if somebody is working with their ex, or if somebody has a child with an ex and they have to communicate fairly regularly, they have a child to be responsible together. Issuing any sort of ultimatum in that sense just doesn't make sense. In other cases, I've seen people issue ultimatums in order to change the status of the relationship. I want to stop dating casually. I want us to move in together. I want us to get married. I want us to get serious. And the other person just doesn't feel that it's necessary to take that relationship to that level. Maybe they've gone through certain life stages. Maybe they've been through that process and they're not interested in getting that serious again. at that point, you knew that going in. Now, 3 or 4 years later, you want to change the nature of the relationship just because? That just does not make sense. And you can't expect that your partner is going to be receptive to these ideas.
But as you're saying, there are times when it's a good idea to give an ultimatum. Wouldn't that last case be one? I mean, if you are in a relationship and you feel that you want it to go to the next level and the other person doesn't want to go to the next level, wouldn't it be an idea to give the ultimatum at that point? Because if they say no, what are you hanging around for?
You're very, very correct on this. And what I normally advise clients is to say, did you ever discuss the nature of your relationship when you first started dating? Now, if two people get together and they say, yes, I'm open to getting married, I am open to living together, I'm open to getting serious one day, and they're never following through, then absolutely, I agree with you 100%, an ultimatum does need to be issued. If, however, and this is more of what I see, people are told right from the beginning what they should expect. No, I'm not really looking to get into this. I like things just the way they are. I'm never looking to get married again. I'm never looking to get into a family situation again. When they're told this right from the beginning, and the other person sits there and waits and says, but I hope my partner will change his or her mind. That's when I say, what's the point of this ultimatum? You knew the parameters going in. By staying, you agree to those parameters. That's when I look at it and say, an ultimatum? I'm not so sure.
Now, you did, if you were very careful in making your response very gender neutral, but I'm going to muddy the waters here a little bit. And you use the old theory that the difference between men and women in a relationship is that men always think the woman's never going to change, and women always think the man will. And both are wrong.
Yes, both are wrong. I can tell you that in my practice, you would generally expect to see more women pushing for a very serious relationship and the man being much more hesitant. But I can also tell you there's a significant number. And, you know, the stereotype just doesn't hold up in the actual practice. In the actual practice, I'm seeing a lot of men who say, I really want to get serious with somebody. And it's a woman who might be saying, look, I've been through the whole marriage thing. I want my freedom now. I like my life being this free, being unattached. I want to focus on raising my kids. And I'm just looking for some companionship, but I'm not ready to go through all that again. So I've actually see it on both sides. Attachment issues are not gender specific.
Okay, I want to switch gears a little bit. We have a few minutes left, and I want to talk about something a little different, but you touched on a few moments ago. And that is the situation where somebody says, I don't want you to be in contact with your ex. Now, let's remove the idea that either they work with their ex, or as you say, they have children with their ex. Let's just say it's the old adage, we just are friends. Some people can be in a relationship and break up and be friends with their exes. Some can't. But what if you're in a situation where you can be friends with your exes and want to keep your ex as a friend, and your new partner says no?
Okay, this is actually something that does come up. And the answer is, and I'm just going to give you the generic answer, and then we can deal with the specific context. The generic answer is, if you put anyone else, friend or family, ahead of your partner, you're going to guarantee a divorce down the road. So you always put your partner ahead of your friends and family. So if your partner is saying, no, I don't want you to be friends with that particular person, you follow through on your partner's request. Once that's done, now we get into the context of it. What was it about being friends with the ex that was a threat to your partner? Is there something in your behavior that you've done that made your ex worry? Have you ever spoken ill of your ex to that partner and your ex has reason to say, this is not good for our relationship? Have you behaved in a way where maybe in your past you've cheated with that ex with your other partners? Is there a context that would explain why your current partner is not comfortable with you having any ties with your ex? Maybe there's also the issue that, okay, it's one thing to be friendly. It's one thing to be an acquaintance. It's one thing to be on good terms with an ex. But if you are talking to your ex on a daily basis as a friend, and you spend more time in communication with your ex than you are with your partner, that's a red flag. And no partner should be in that position where someone's ex has a deeper level of emotional intimacy than the partner themselves.
Understood. But what if the what if it's none of those issues? What if the reason your ex or your current partner doesn't want you with your ex at any time, in any way, shape, or form? What if the reason for that is because of
just on principle? They just don't.
Well,
want
not
you
just
talking
on principle. I was about to say because what if it's just your partner's own personal baggage from previous relationships that might be tainting this situation?
Okay, let's say it comes to from your new partner's previous baggage.
Right.
If you're accepting your new partner, you're bringing your new partner into your life, you take on your partner's past baggage. It's an all or nothing deal. And if you cannot take your partner's baggage, then you really can't accept your partner fully. You shouldn't be in a relationship with your partner. I know that sounds really harsh. But I also deal with people who come to me and say, okay, I just got serious with somebody and now they've shared their past with me and I can't handle it. Well, you either are going to be accepting of it or you're not. You can't do this halfway. So if your partner has that baggage and it's going to have to modify some of your behaviors going forward, that's your choice. You want your partner in your life, you're going to have to make some compromises. It's not about what's fair. It's about what works.
So it's almost like a game show. Because you've moved on from that last relationship, the lovely parting gift you now get is a new set of luggage.
Yeah, exactly.
From somebody else entirely different. Frank, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. People can go to your website, which is franktalks.com. You also have a newsletter that you put out, right?
Yeah, it's very new. It's to let people know when I do media appearances like this. I'll be sending out links. We'll be sending out information on new products and services. It's just for people to stay in contact. You might get one newsletter every week or so. And if you do sign up now, you're going to get my 13th book, 400 pages long, the best Frank Talks articles I've ever written in one volume. You get that for free, emailed to you when you sign up for the newsletter.
Excellent. Frank, thank you very much for being on the program with us once again.
Peter, it's always a pleasure, and I look forward to being on in the future.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit. You can check out his website at franktalks.com to find out more about his upcoming events. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0243, and you'll find the link to his site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Imagine you're at work and you see a colleague slumped over in her chair. You discover she's not breathing and suspect she's had a heart attack. A woman in Ohio found herself in this situation and, thinking quickly, started CPR. She did what she's supposed to do, but what reportedly happened next is shocking. According to a local TV report, the woman was told to stop CPR by a boss because she could be, and I quote, held liable if something goes wrong, end of quote. Sadly, the woman later died. Let's be fair, we're hearing too many disturbing stories these days about how the fear of being sued is changing the way people behave in America. It's gotten so bad that most states have had to enact what are called Good Samaritan laws. These laws protect people from being sued when they rush to the aid of someone in need. And I mention them now because we need to make sure that the fear of being sued is never listed as a cause of death. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about addiction recovery. And, of course, we do indeed have an idiot of the day, but I got a few more Stuff File news stories to get to here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a Virginia jury has ordered a 53-year-old man to pay $5,001 to his former co-worker after he admitted to putting something in his coffee and it wasn't cream and sugar. A jury in Culpeper County Circuit Court ordered James Carroll Butler to pay Michael Utz for spiking his coffee with urine. Actually, he put it in the coffee pot. This was back in March of 2009 while they were both working at the town's water waste plant. Oh, there's the irony, huh? The jury found that Butler, who had worked at the plant for 17 years before leaving in 2009, had, quote, personal ill will and spite, unquote, toward Utz. When the tainted coffee pot was tested, lab results revealed that the strange brew contained urine and fecal matter. Ooh. The plant mechanic had been seeking $378,000 in compensatory damages and $350,000 in punitive damages. In a letter Butler wrote in March of 2009, he said, "I'd done something I am very much ashamed of to a coworker for reasons which are stress-related and things going on in my life on and off the job. I am very much ashamed of my stupid and childlike behavior." Utz's attorney, Michael Sharman, told the local newspaper that his client is really, really happy about the victory, and he's glad it's done. Yeah. I hope kids don't go trick-or-treating at Butler's house either, by the way. This guy seems to be a real piece of work. Moving right along, let us get more biblical, shall we? How many commandments do you think you can violate in one fell swoop? Well, let's see. James Chadden, age 46, pleaded guilty in January to several commandment violations stemming from a July incident at the Christian Horizons Church in Peterborough, Ontario. Chadden brought a prostitute into the church for sex after hours and stole money to pay her from a church drawer, then lied about it to police, saying he was forced to raid the drawer. Yeah. I think we're up to at least three. Unless the hooker was also his neighbor's wife, that would be four. And if it took place on the Sabbath, that would be five. And toss in six if he yelled out the Lord's name during sex. Well, at least he hasn't killed anybody. And the Phoenix suburb of Maryvale was overrun, according to February reports, after several packs of up to 15 chihuahuas each were roaming the neighborhoods, frightening children. Coincidentally, 2 months earlier in Hobart, Australia, the local Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals announced that it was overwhelmed by massive recent donations of chihuahuas, most of them from one couple. Said a spokesman, "We are up to our knees in little chihuahuas." Really? Just how short are you? Wow. Anyway, we have just one more item before we get to our last guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Jason Payne, age 35, of London, England, traveled to Basingstoke to attend a friend's birthday party. When he booked a room at the Basingstoke Hilton, he noted in the comments on the form that "there's a large snake in my trousers, hope that's okay." He figured no one would read the comment, but when he checked in, the clerk laughed at the comment. Payne, a computer programmer, said there were no incidents during his stay, but when he returned home, he had an email from Hilton manager Catherine Wurst banning him from the hotel for life. The chain's corporate office confirmed that such decisions are, quote, at the discretion of the hotel team, unquote, and added that Hilton Basingstoke continues to operate a legitimate pet-friendly policy. Seriously? Dudes, it's not that kind of snake. Really? Wow. Talk about something going over someone's head. Completely. Anyway, let's get to our last guest on the program, shall we? Erica Spiegelman is a consultant, counselor, writer, and speaker who is an expert in the field of addiction recovery. She treats individuals from a 360-degree perspective called mind, body, and spirit. Erica joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Erica.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Yeah.
Is the problem of addiction recovery, which I guess when you can talk about other things too, you know, depression, anxiety and the like, is this a growing concern or is it something we're just learning more about?
I think it is a growing concern. I also think we're learning about it. I think it's not an either or, it's an and. I think that, you know, with social media and everything, you know, and access that, you know, kids have to Twitter and Pinterest and Instagram, and you know, I think that there's a lot of ways that people tune out, and I think that one of those ways now is social media. So they distract from their everyday problems, or they procrastinate on things that they need to do, and I think that leads to, you know, feeling like their lives are out of control, which then could possibly lead to an addiction eventually. You know. So I think that anxiety and depression and eating disorders and addiction and all these things are plaguing people more now these days than ever, because we have prescription pills readily available. We have everything at our fingertips. You want to order something, you can, you know, right away from the internet. So I think it's something that is changing, you know, because it's changing with what's going on in our, you know, in our world, in our environment.
One of the things we see a lot of and hear a lot of are people in the public eye who are going through these situations. And I find that that can be somewhat of a double-edged sword. The fact that they're coming forward and talking about their situation might be of assistance and help to people who are going through it in their everyday lives. The other side of that coin is that because they're successful people, some people might look at it as, well, it's almost part of a lifestyle.
Right, and they look up to that lifestyle. Yeah, you're right. It is a double-edged sword. You know, I truly believe that, you know, how the media paints these celebrities or these young, you know, teenagers, Lindsay Lohan, we have Selena Gomez, we have Zac Efron, we have all of these young, you know, young adults or even teens that are getting caught up with addictions, and young people are obviously catching on to this, and it does glamorize the fact that, you know, there is this kind of party scene for young people, and now, you know, Lindsay Lohan has a TV show, and it's, for me, when I watched it, it showcased her life. But, you know, it showed how, you know, kind of being sober is a miserable thing. And for me, you know, I encourage my clients to be proud of the fact that they're sober and to look forward to a life full of beauty and joy and authenticity. And so right now what I see out in the media is kind of, you know, even though they may be glorifying it, they're not painting a good picture of what it is to live a healthy life. It's more so these young kids are seeing it in the opposite light. So I think that is a little dangerous, actually.
I mentioned in the introduction mind, body, and spirit. Can you describe what it is that you do and how you help people?
Yeah. Well, in my own personal practice, I truly believe in treating the mind, body, and spirit, because we can't have, you know, one part of our life cannot be healed without the other part. So mind meaning, you know, reading good things, having hobbies, being surrounded by positive people, body, taking care of your body with exercise and moving. It doesn't have to be, you know, it could be light walking. It could be, you know, eating nutritious foods, sleeping 6 to 8 hours. I truly think that we have to have that balanced as well. And then spirit, you know, finding a community, finding something that works for you, whether it is meditation or whether it is, for my clients, AA, or maybe it's, you know, Buddhism or mindfulness practice. So really treating all three pieces of everything is connected, our spirit, our mind, and our body. So I believe that we need to address all those issues.
We live in a world, especially nowadays with social media, that is so connected and yet at the same time so disconnected. Is that adding to or exacerbating the situation?
Well, I think it's twofold. I mean, I think people use social media for community, sometimes in a positive way, you know. There's some really great ways to use social media and to get valuable information. And then there's also, you know, ways in which, you know, I have clients that order drugs off the black market from, you know, online. And I have kids that learn from YouTube how to have eating disorders, you know. So I do think that there's a big epidemic going on and what content is allowed on social media and how these teenagers have access to basically finding out anything on the internet. So, you know, it's like everything that's out there, there's the good and the bad, but it's really about, I think, you know, empowering people with education and teaching them, you know, from early on, you know, we call it prevention in schools, high schools, junior high schools, and really helping kids understand and giving them the facts.
You mentioned earlier, you know, surrounding yourself with good people and having hobbies and the like. Do you find that there's a certain lack of direction or people are rudderless in a certain way and that can lead to certain problems?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I think that a lot of people these days don't find, you know, like, I'll say to somebody, you know, what is your passion? What do you love to do? I don't know, watch TV, or I play video games, or, you know, I think the young people in our culture don't necessarily, you know, play instruments like they used to, or learn a second or third language, or take cooking classes, or, you know, sit home and read, you know, with a book, or sit down and write in a journal. I think it's really changed. And so, yeah, I think that there is some, from what I've seen, I think more so now than ever, there's kind of this generation that does not have direction, and that isn't taught from a young age how to ground yourself in healthy ways, how to cope in healthy ways. So when you get stressed out, you know, you don't, from what I see, they don't take a run, or they don't take a bath, or read a book, or, you know, take a walk around the corner. Now it's, if you're stressed out, oh, here's a pill, here's a Klonopin, or, oh, hey, my mom, you know, takes a shot, or, you know, there's all these easy ways of relieving stress these days, and they're not the healthiest or sustainable.
But you say that, you know, there's a lack of direction. Is it not possibly a lack of self-direction? And the reason why I say that is we seem to live in a world today where kids don't do things by intuition. They do things, I mean, just the term play date. When I was a kid, you went out and played. You didn't schedule a play date.
Right.
It just seems that we regiment too much of what kids do, and then don't give them an opportunity to discover on their own what they like or don't like.
Right. I agree. I agree with that. Absolutely. I do agree. I think it's a very, I think there's a lot of competition, and I think that it's really hard on kids these days. And to, I think, you know, parents too, they imprint what they think would be, you know, acceptable for their child's life, instead of, like you said, allowing them to explore what is their passion, what fits, what doesn't fit, and let them make mistakes and let them learn from the mistakes, instead of, you know, trying to always protect our kids and guide them. Let them, you know, fail and get back up. And I think that is a problem. People don't do that enough.
Your website, ericaspiegelman.com, what will people find when they go there?
I have a bunch of blogs. I write a bunch of blogs, and there's a lot of good writing on. I write about the masks that we wear and kind of recognizing how to be more authentic. So there's a lot of great articles on how to take care of yourself. I call it the 1 hour rule. There's also, you know, my Twitter feed's up there every single day. There's some inspirational quotes. I have a lot about my consulting, and, you know, just some good information, but a lot of good reading. And I have a place where people could share under Share Your Story. So I want to hear from people, either their stories of hope or their stories of struggle. Either way, I want to give people a voice so that they can get some feedback and feel like they're heard. So all of that is found on my website. And also, if anybody is interested in actually being counseled or having some counseling in their life or coaching, then, you know, you can get a hold of me that way also.
And what is the 1 hour rule?
The 1 hour rule is for self-care. It's about taking 1 hour a day, whether that is 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes at noon, 15 minutes in the afternoon, and one at night. It's about doing something every day for that hour that involves self-care and healthy ways. So I have a whole list up there of things that people can do, not anything in excess, and not anything that is going to be destructive. So no drinking, smoking, doing drugs, incessantly watching porn or on the computer, video games. I give people healthy ways of how to enjoy themselves and reconnect with themselves every day. So whether that's running for you, for me, I'm a runner, so I take my hour. I do a half an hour run in the morning. I sit down, I breathe for about 10 minutes, I'm just mindful of my breath, and then usually at the end of the day I take a bath and I put on music and I just give myself some downtime. So that involves an hour, and there's no excuse for anybody not to have an hour in the day. You can make that time. I know people have busy lives, but it's one way to keep yourself on track and keep yourself mentally, you know, fit and healthy.
And people can find out more information, again, by going to your website, which is ericaspiegelman.com, correct?
Yes, www.ericaspiegelman.com, yes.
Erica, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you very much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Erica Spiegelman. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0243, and you'll find the links to Erica's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Carlos Ruiz, age 42, was arrested in Hayden Township, New Jersey, in February after he violated a cardinal rule by returning to the scene of the crime. He had stolen valuable items, including a sound system, from a home and had gotten away, but was captured a half hour later when he returned for the sound system's remote control. Now, wow, why would a crook who got away scot-free return to the scene of the crime merely to pick up the remote to a sound system that he stole? Well, first of all, he's too lazy to get up and change stations, but most importantly, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0243. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0243. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
Been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.